Hi everyone, I'm Gina Dana, and this is Environmental Hub's Green Spot. This podcast is designed to highlight the most pressing environmental issues facing our world. We are going to be talking with professional environmentalists and activists, as well as other members of our global community, about today's major issues. Prepare to get active. On Blog Talk Radio. Today we have a wonderful show for you. We have two guests. We have John and Ruth Scott from Florida. They are environmentalists, a dynamic couple. John Scott is a group chair of Sierra Club Calusa Group. He's a board member of Riverwatch, which is the latest Waterkeeper Alliance affiliate. He's the co-founder of Clean Water Initiative of Florida, an environmental activist, and soon to announce his running against Matt Caldwell, District 79. It's very important that we have people in office and people with power that are environmentally responsible. And I think this is something that is really missing in Florida. So hopefully many progressives will start running and go everywhere from the mayor all the way up to the governor. And that's a great dream. John is here with his wife, Ruth, and she is a conservation chair for Sierra Club Calusa Group. She's a board member of Caloosahatchee River Watch. She's also the co-founder of Clean Water Initiative of Florida and a great environmental activist. Today, they're going to speak about many topics. We have everything from water quality, fracking, Amendment 1 funds, Everglade restoration, and the political problems of Florida. So to start us right off, we'll talk with John, and we'll talk about water quality. Hello, John. How are you doing?
I'm good, Jamie. How are you?
Oh, good.
Good. Yeah, as far as water quality goes, I mean, I think everybody's, I know your group Environmental Hub, as well as a number of other Facebook pages, including our own, I think everyone's familiar with those really horrible pictures that we've seen this year where it looks like there's an oil spill off our coast. And, you know, that was a direct result of the bad environmental policies that we've seen in the state that are still allowing to this day discharges, large volumes of freshwater polluted discharges to roar down the Caloosahatchee during times of high rainfall and when there's large volumes of water that have to go somewhere because of the way that the system has been created over the years with the draining of the Everglades and basically re-engineering the whole ecosystem of the Everglades associated with Lake Okeechobee as well as our east and west coast estuaries. And so we're still seeing those, you know, that allowance where this water can be released because the lake levels are too high and the Army Corps of Engineers is mandated, you know, by public safety needs to keep an eye on that lake level, and when it gets to a certain point, they have to release the water down the east and the west coast estuaries, which would be the Caloosahatchee River on the west coast and the St. Lucie River on the east coast. And so what we're dealing with is, in addition to our own watershed, you know, our local basin, we have, you know, runoff issues there as well. But the Lake O discharges, obviously, are a severe problem that we have to deal with whenever there's the, you know, problems with the lake where the lake levels are too high and they just have to release water. So, you know, we're seeing fish kills on the east coast. We're seeing dying of tape grass and seagrass on the west coast. The fisheries are getting just decimated. You know, manatees dying, dolphins dying. I mean, you've just got a number of problems with marine life and aquatic plant life that's getting killed off. Yeah, oyster beds. It's a severe problem, and it's something that we've had to witness and something that has been well documented on Facebook. You know, there's no shortage of people that are outraged by this. And so that's why we're hopeful this year, especially with the, you know, the people, power to the people climate of our electoral season so far, that people are finally outraged enough to where something will translate into political action, because you know, there's been, you know, large chunks of time over our history where people have just been sleepwalking and not paying attention to these issues until they become so unbearable that they have to. Like, case in point, the Captains for Clean Water, they hadn't traditionally been involved with hardcore activism in this area because it hadn't become unbearable for them yet. But once it reached a crescendo to the point where they're losing 90% of their charters in a particular time period, and the water looks like a chocolate milkshake, and they can't take clients out there, or they have to travel much greater distances to get to water that is acceptable for fishing and for recreational use, that they finally said, enough's enough, we have to get involved. And the wonderful thing about them getting involved is that not only have they sought out the right people to talk to about the science of it and about the actual solutions, but they've stayed headstrong even in the face of legislators like Caldwell and Beniquisto and others who like to talk a good game on water, but when you look at their voting record and their policies, the policies that they've created and have been signed into law, they've been terrible for our environment. They've been terrible for the very thing that we're talking about, which is water quality. And so that being said, Captains for Clean Water, that's a really good organization. They've come into this. They've pulled the fishing community into it, which, typically the fishing community tends to be more conservative. So now they're going to probably scare a lot of people, because now instead of just us progressive folks and us, liberal folks that are always fighting for the environment and that typically vote the other way, now they're going to be threatened with actual conservative votes, because a lot of the people in the Cabins for Clean Water and that we've talked to have said, I'm actually willing to vote on this single issue. I typically would never vote for a Democrat or vote for anyone other than a Republican, but if whoever it is, it's going to ensure that, our environment is represented well in Tallahassee or wherever, that's who I'm voting for. And so that's refreshing, because we can all agree that the water should not be a partisan political issue. And that being said, we should all be able to come together to work toward a common goal. And that's one thing that I've been able to do, is compartmentalize the water in regards to politics. And when I say that, I can use a really good example is Representative U.S. Congressman Kirk Lawson. He's been a champion on these water issues, and he's a Tea Party Republican. And I typically would not vote for a Tea Party Republican, but in this particular case, I will actually vote for him this next time around, simply because of how strong he has been and what leadership he has shown on this issue, despite all the pressure that I'm sure he's getting from his own party. And he's been proactive to the point where he has not only come out with a bill to repair the Herbert Hoover Dike, which really just expedites it, does not increase capacity. So for people that want to say that, we have to repair the dike because we can hold more water in there, well, that's not really true. The repairs for the dike are meant to just fortify it in its current state, not increase capacity. So, because that's one other way that legislators that are that are running on a sugar agenda, meaning that are funded by Big Sugar, they want to recognize every solution but the one that we actually need. And that's because the one that we actually need involves buying land south of the lake, and what's there? Sugarcane farm and sugar land. So, that's kind of where we're at with water quality in terms of the politics of it, is that you've got some special interests that are spending an incredible amount of money at all levels of our government to maintain their own status quo so that they continue to do exactly what they want to do. And that is, they don't want the drainage system, they don't want our ecosystem to be re-engineered back to anything like it originally was, because that would mean they would have to part with some of that land south of the lake. And even though they could be heroes by being part of the solution rather than part of the problem, they still don't want to do what's right. And anybody that says anything against them, they will spend boatloads of money to either defeat them in elections or any number of other things. Case in point, our current agriculture secretary, Secretary of Agriculture, rather, Adam Putnam, was just recently quoted saying that if there are any candidates or any people that are working with bull sugar, that they were going to be vaporized in the upcoming election. Well, that would include me. So Adam Putnam basically issued a statement that said, you know, you're going to be vaporized in the upcoming election because I will be working with bull sugar, you know, in different ways in this race. So, and to be honest with you, I don't care. I'm not scared of them, and there's nothing they're going to be able to do to me that is going to change my mind. So they can spend all the money they want. Fact of the matter is, I'm going to continue fighting for our environment and for the water to be clean, because that's what's right and that's what we should be doing. And we shouldn't be taking a lot of money from a particular special interest, because that's the wrong thing to do. And it's making a lot of people suffer, a lot of people, a lot of marine life, aquatic plant life. I mean, there's just so many different ways in which our state is suffering right now as a result of these water quality issues and as a result of the failed environmental policies that are being forced on us by Big Sugar and by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is another group that does wonderful, wonderful things, meaning very bad legislation that they create and then feed to legislators. So the science has been out there, like you said. I mean, we're talking about the political problems. The science has been there for decades. That's not the issue. We know how to fix the problem. The problem is, you know, we need land south of Lake Okeechobee so that we can restore at least a portion of that original flow and move that water down in to the, you know, south of lake, so it can be stored, treated, and then conveyed down into the Everglades. Once it's been treated and it's fresh, clean water, you know, Florida Bay needs fresh, clean water because the salinity levels are extremely high, and that ecosystem down there is being devastated by the lack of fresh water. Sea level rise is a real thing that's happening on the east coast of Florida. Clean fresh water in the Everglades will help stave off saltwater intrusion into our aquifers. I mean, there's a number of things. Plus, buying land south of the lake, it's a very time-sensitive issue because, A, we only have until 2020. We have a current option with U.S. Sugar to purchase 153,000 acres of land south of Lake Okeechobee. Now, some people will try to say, "Oh, well, that's not the right piece of land," or this or that. Or they'll raise, you know, the people that are on the sugar agenda will try to raise a number of obstacles. And the way to, you know, the answer to that is that, you know, you can take 153,000 acres and you can use what they call land swaps to offer landowners that have land that is more desirable for what it is that we need to do, which is, you know, create some sort of a flowway going south into the Everglades for that water. We can use land swaps to get the right land. And so even the U.S. Water Institute study from 2015 says that, hey, anytime you have an opportunity to pick up land in the EAA, I mean the Everglades Agricultural Area, which is that area south of Lake Okeechobee, you should do it. Doesn't matter where it's at or what. You can always there's not that many opportunities to buy that land. So, you know, we need to buy that land. It's only going to get more expensive because that option is based on fair market value. Once the Herbert Hoover Dyke repairs, you know, as they progress and there's more of a sense of, you know, of safety because the dike's being fortified around the lake, that land's going to go up. The U.S. Sugar folks and other sugar companies like Florida Crystals and I think Flow Sun and whoever else owns that land, they're going to try to develop the land, because when you develop the land, even if it's just small portions of land, it's going to increase the property value of all the land. So, I mean, they're going to do whatever they can to increase property value. So at the very least, if for some reason we manage to be successful in exercising that option, that at least they'll get a, you know, huge payday. And if not, if they can run the clock out on this last option, they'll have been successful in holding on to every last bit of land in the EAA and, you know, maintain their status quo without any consideration for the greater good of the state or for the region. And while we also, you know, at some point, obviously, we need land north of the lake as well for storage and conveyance, because there is a 6-to-1 inflow to outflow, meaning the amount of water coming into the lake from the north side to the amount of water that's leaving on the east and west and south sides. Even if you stopped all water from coming in there, or you even just, you know, replace the water that's coming in there with Evian spring water, you still have legacy nutrients and pollution in the lake that are still going to continue to detrimentally affect the ecosystems on the east, west coast, and south into the Everglades for decades, if not centuries. So we need it all. And that's the thing is, you know, we've got, you know, legislators like Matt Caldwell, Joe Negron, among others, Chris Afuli, stubbornly refused to acknowledge that the southern flowway and buying land south of Lake Okeechobee is absolutely imperative, and they have gone on these incredible propaganda campaigns to make you think otherwise. And if you look in the paper right now, U.S. Sugar's been spending, you know, a ton of money on full-page ads to tell everyone how wonderful they are and how wonderful the water quality is in Lake Okeechobee and how they're not to blame for our water problems. But nothing could be further from the truth. As Bob Marley said, don't let them fool you. Because they have an agenda, and it's driven by money and profit, and that's what their main goal is. And we see it in other industries, too. They're no different than big oil and big pharma, in the way that they do things.
John, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question about Big Sugar. Are they receiving any subsidies for this land south of Lake Okeechobee? Could that be a reason why they are so reluctant to allow Amendment 1 to be honored and to sell the land?
Well, actually, it's I don't believe they don't receive subsidies for the land. They receive subsidies for their business operation. I mean, they get a taxpayer subsidy in order to keep doing what they do.
Okay, so that by selling that land, they're not gonna lose any subsidies then by selling that land.
No, they wouldn't lose. No, they wouldn't at all. They'll continue to get that subsidy. But I mean, one thing that has almost happened. It came within 15 votes last year of. Passing the U.S. House is rolling back the sugar subsidies. That is something that, there is definitely a strong desire by a number of people, including a lot of Tea Party Republicans who are not for subsidies of any kind, to get rid of sugar subsidies and level the playing field. And if that happens, that's going to be bad for them and good for us more than likely. So, we can all, hope that will happen. We can try to pull for that too. If everyone just, pays attention when that vote comes up on the sugar subsidies, just do your homework, know when that's going to happen, and then start flooding members of whatever committee or members of Congress who are going to vote on it with phone calls, telling them that they should vote to, vote for no sugar subsidies, because that definitely will put a crimp in their style if we get that pushed through. So, and then as far as Amendment 1 funds go, that's kind of a different story entirely. They don't want that money spent on purchasing that land south of Lake Okeechobee. So, some of the same legislators I mentioned previously and a number of others have decided that, they are not going to allocate Amendment 1 funds for the way that, we all know that voters intended for it to be used. It passed with 75% of the vote, which is historic, back in 2014. And, nothing ever passes with 75% of the vote. And, the primary ballot language, the first thing on there was land acquisition for, sensitive lands for Everglades restoration. And everybody knows that's why people didn't go to the polls all fired up to, to purchase vehicles or insurance or, balance the budget. That should be done out of general revenue, and they darn well know that. And instead, they've misused those funds 2 years in a row. A Sierra Club and other organizations in Earth Justice, I believe, are involved in a lawsuit. I don't know exactly where that lawsuit is right now. I have not heard any updates lately, but hold their feet to the fire and make the legislature use the money for its intended purpose. Just recently they passed Legacy Florida, like some big deal, which allocates $200 million out of the $800 million a year of Amendment 1 funds to use for land purchases. But it can also be used for other things. So basically you're saying, here's a quarter of the money that was supposed to be used for this purpose, and we're going to let you use it for that purpose, but then other things too. So it's kind of like, you know, what was the point? It was like smoke and mirrors, you know. It's really just kind of not. I mean, people are kind of happy about it. There's some environmental groups that even praised it, which that's fine. And don't get me wrong. I mean, $200 million is nothing to sneeze at, and I think it's great that we can get that to use for, you know, to finish Everglades restoration projects that are in the process that just need more funding. That's all well and good, but we also need more land, especially land south of the lake. We desperately need that. So it remains to be seen, but that's another reason why, you know, I think it's important for people to run for offices, because, you know, we really need people that can make a difference, that have the right mindset as far as protecting our environment and actually representing the people.
Yes, definitely. In Florida, as well as the rest of the country, the environment needs a seat at the table, and it's missing in almost every Republican-run legislative branch, and that's really sad to see, especially Florida. You have a plethora of problems. I mean, you don't have just one problem. You have many, and it all does, it all relates to the water. And Ruth, you were going to talk a little bit about fracking here. That's another thing. 318, Senate Bill 318. Richter himself got rid of the bill, killed his own bill, but I hear that it's already popping up again, and there's other people trying to start fracking in Florida. Is this true?
Yes, Jeannie, it is. This is a hot-button issue for me due to the fact that I was born and raised in Texas, which is the heartland of oil and gas and fracking. I like to call it frackland. fortunately, we were able to succeed in shutting down the legislation a second time, and that they will pursue in the next legislation going forward with pushing for regulating of oil and gas and fracking extraction. You know, they try every trick of the trade that they can to, you know, try and make it seem like they're doing the right thing for the environment, regulating fracking. But the problem with SB 318 was the type of regulating that they were doing with that legislation did not pertain to the form and the method of fracking that they would have been doing here in Southwest Florida. We have a unique geology here with limestone, dolomite, and calcite in our geology, that they actually have to acid frack the well. So they use hydrochloric and hydrofluoric acid to do acid well stimulation to get, be it natural gas or oil, to flow with our geology that we have here. So we do know that unless if Rodriguez does get voted out this next go-around, which we're hoping on that he does plan to move forward with new legislation through the House. And then I believe it's probably going to be Senator Simmons that's going to motion to move forward the Senate legislation in the next session regarding, you know, oil and gas and fracking. So we do know that there will be another motion to move to implement a fracking ban throughout the state of Florida, and obviously that's what we want. We do know that Senator Bullard from Dade County will be making that move, and then probably along with Darren Soto as well, and they have done that the last two sessions, but unfortunately we're not able to get this legislation on the floor to be able to go forward with it. So that's something what we need all of the listeners to do for us, is to, you know, call their legislators, reach out to them, let them know how important that it is that we get a fracking ban implemented in the state of Florida. We're talking about, you know, our drinking water, the water we bathe in, the environmental impacts alone are just horrific. And then again, what they do to air quality and the impacts on climate change. With the emission flare stacks that are attached to any well, they pump out tons of methane and volatile organic compounds nonstop, 24/7, 7 days a week for the life of the well. So just the environmental impacts alone from the flare stacks are huge. So, you know, this is something that is not a viable option for Florida. In my book, it's really not a viable option anywhere as far as I'm concerned. You know, fracking has been taking place all throughout the world, and, you know, we've got thousands and thousands of wells throughout the United States, and most of the United States does the hydraulic fracturing, which is a different method of fracking a well than what they would be doing here in Florida due to our unique geology. But, yeah, we're hoping that we can definitely get a fracking ban implemented. We've been successful getting city ordinances implemented. We actually did get a fracking ban ordinance in Bonita Springs, also the villages of Estero, and then John, myself, and along with Aaron Handy from Oceana, we were able to get a fracking ban and a seismic air gun blasting resolution, which is a whole other issue, implemented for the city of Cape Coral. So we're going to continue to keep plugging along and getting these fracking ban ordinances implemented just to be able to protect the communities, you know, and their drinking supplies and, you know, their way of life in those cities. So it's, you know, a hot-button issue. All of the environmental groups are on top of it. The Conservancy of Southwest Florida has been, you know, wonderful as far as really tackling this, and they understand that the impacts are something that we cannot afford to, you know, let these legislators, you know, move the legislation that they want through to be able to, you know, profit on the backs of Floridians and, you know, compromise our environment.
Oh, yes. That's what was so horrendous about SB 318 was it was trying to take away your right to ban fracking in your local communities.
Right, the preemption of home rule. And that was the one thing that was the biggest concern, you know, because we have a right to be able to protect ourselves and protect, you know, our water supplies, our way of life, you know, because there's so many things that come along with fracking where you've got, you know, huge trucks, you know, coming and going up and down the roads. You know, then there's a whole other issue with buffer zones and setbacks, and that all has to do with zoning. And then there's lights whenever you've got, you know, any kind of well going in. There's huge lights that are, you know, just going nonstop, especially at nighttime. So there are several other, you know, bad factors that go along with that as well, other than obviously the environmental impacts alone. But, you know, we just have such a unique geology, and it's so delicate. And, you know, once you start injecting any kind of, you know, hydrochloric or hydrofluoric acid, not to mention the other, you know, horrible chemicals that they shoot in with the sand and the water, to, you know, open up the fissures, which are, you know, anywhere from arsenic to benzene to xylene, you know, they're carcinogenic, so they're, you know, definitely going to be impactful on, you know, the overall quality of the water and what it will do to our health.
Oh, yes. You definitely cannot frack in Florida. We have a couple minutes left of our podcast tonight. What do you have going on now? What is your next event?
Well, as a conservation chair, I'm involved with a lot of different things. And like you said earlier in the podcast, that there are so many environmental issues going on right now. Coming up in May, the month of May, on May 21st, there will be a March Against Monsanto Day of Action. And this is something that's going on all throughout the United States and actually the entire world, for that matter.
That's wonderful.
So we're going to be doing that, and that will be held on the 21st. It will be from 12 to 3, which is a Saturday, over at the Bell Tower Shops, and Fresh Market is going to be the sponsor of that event. And, you know, we just urge people to come out and, you know, speak up for their food supply and, you know, march with us and feel free to make signs. So
we'll
that's
have to
one
post
issue.
On Environmental Hub. We'll post it.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank
we'll
you. There's also
that.
A Facebook page for that event as well, and I've shared it on my own personal Facebook page.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, thank you so much, and I want to thank you and John so much for coming on our show here, and I'm talking. I'm going to have to ask you to come back again. And,
okay.
I know you have plenty more that we could talk about, and so anytime you want to come on, you just call me, and we're always on Saturdays. So,
well, thank you for having us and giving us this opportunity to talk about these huge environmental concerns that are, you know, impacting us all.
Oh, yes.
In closing, I'd just like to say one more thing as far as running for office. That's what I have going on for the immediate future. obviously, that's a very time-consuming thing. But my website is votejohnscott.com. If anybody wants to know more information or donate or whatever, that's the website that I have. And there's also the ballot petition on there. You have to live in the district to sign the ballot petition to get me on the ballot. But the district is District 79 It's for Florida State
Well,
House.
We'll post in our comment section also. So,
great.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having us on. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And it was just wonderful. And we'll talk to you soon. And thank
okay.
you.
Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
I would like to leave you with a quote and a thought. Environmental issues are not local issues. They are global. Social media activism not only works, it is one of the best ways to outshout the special interests that actively work against our environment. When you see a petition, sign it. When there is a call-in event, pick up the phone and call your legislators. When there is a write-in event, send an email. When there is a peaceful protest in your community, attend. Search Environmental Hub on Facebook and join us. Until next time, wishing you peace and love.